Commissioner Moyer, can you hear now? No. I'm going to. Commissioner Jones Dixon, can we touch the microphone, please?
Good morning, clerk. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you. It sounds good.
Tasia, Commissioner Moyer is going to call in on the phone to do for the audio part of the meeting. So we'll just take a minute to do that.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, Commissioner Moyer. Can you hear me?
I can hear.
Oh, she hung up.
Are you there?
Yes. I can
okay,
hear you.
I'm back. I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong. Sorry about that.
Okay. Perfect. I think all of the commissioners are here. I'm going to go ahead and record. And we can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Tasia. Thanks, everyone, for bearing with us as we're getting set up for the virtual presentation. So appreciate everyone's flexibility today. So welcome to the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners regular board meeting. Today's meeting, as I said, is a virtual board meeting. For those who wish to provide public testimony who may have arrived in person, we have provided a public testimony space at the Multnomah Building in room 126, and we have staff there ready to assist folks with doing that. So we will have, if we have folks there, we will have them provide testimony during the public testimony part of the meeting. For those who are presenting today, please mute your mic when you're not speaking, and when presenting, please make sure to unmute your mic and turn on your camera. And just a reminder for all presenters to please state your name for the record before speaking or responding to questions. And audience members, I ask you to consider your language in comments and testimony today. May I have a motion on the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Brim Edwards moves. Commissioner Moyer seconds. Approval of the consent calendar. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, the consent calendar is approved. We will now hear public testimony, Tayshia.
Opportunity for public comment on non-agenda matters. This is a time for the board to hear public testimony, not for board deliberation. When it is your turn to speak, I will call your name and unmute you. I will set a timer for 3 minutes when you begin speaking and announce when your time is up, at which point please wrap up your sentence. We have three people signed up for verbal testimony and received one written testimony that was shared with board members and staff. First up, we have FAFO.
Hi, I'm FAFO. My pronouns are try me. I'm going to respectfully ask to not rush me. Last year I was diagnosed with a psychogenetic non-epileptic seizure, my last testimony. So yeah, I took measures. I took meds. I have my sensory vest to help keep me grounded. So I would really appreciate that. Okay. So I'm here once again to speak out. And while Jessica and I have never had a warm working relationship, that's not my concern. My concern is her continued failure to act when our workers and communities need bold leadership. So let's begin with the truth. The last few years, we've witnessed Jessica's lack of leadership, and with transparency absent, and partners are blindsided. Leadership is about standing up when it matters the most, and that's protecting the people who rely on you and making choices that reflect the values that you claim to hold. County workers in our communities deserve safety, honesty, and investment, not retaliation and neglect. We don't need lip service. We need a chair who leads with truth, accountability, and action, not silence. And let's be clear, this failure of leadership doesn't end at the chair's office. Travis Brown is now leaving the county under the weight of workplace complaints. And let's be honest, this wasn't unpredictable. This county entrusted its workers to someone who showed a lack of integrity, a lack of respect, and a stunning absence of basic humanity. That choice didn't just miss the mark. It caused real harm. Employees have been unprotected, unheard, and forced to carry the wounds alone. Lynn, let me tell you something, Travis. Accountability isn't optional when people's emotional and mental safety are at risk. And your silence isn't confusion, it's a strategy. You sidestep accountability because you know I arrive with facts and you're intimidated by it, which makes you intimidated by me. And now that accountability has finally arrived at his door and he's slipping out the back like he always has, let that be known and let it be remembered. The truth is this, too often the ones who cause the harm get to walk away without taking a shred of accountability for their purposeful negligence. Bullies substantiated my claims of discrimination in the workplace. That alone should raise alarms to every person sitting in a position of power here. When an outside agency has to confirm what county leadership chose to ignore, it exposes the truth, the integrity and protections this county claims to value are not being lived out. Multnomah County has carried generations of unhealed trauma, systemic racism, displacement, incarceration, poverty, silence, transphobia, and homophobia, and these aren't accidents. And we're not failing because we're fragile. We're failing because powerful people keep breaking us and calling the pieces progress. I'm not here to be celebrated. I'm here because justice calls me. Healing demands courage, and trauma only ends when truth is told, and that truth includes my own. August of last year, I came close to losing my life, was slipping away from this world, not dramatically, not loudly, but quietly. I wasn't just hurting, I was vanishing. The pain was absolute. It swallowed my pulse, it erased my name, and it emptied every trace of future I thought I'd have. And yet in those final moments, something in me clawed upward, not hope and not clarity, something colder and older. It's something that's older than I still don't understand how I survived, only that survival wasn't supposed to be possible. And I didn't just survive, I returned. So now tell me, with whatever little truth you still have, without performance, without comfort, and without looking away, what settles in you when you understand that you're looking at someone who almost slipped out of this world and is here right now? The county tried to bury me, and I chose to rise anyway. And I won't waste that resurrection on silence, because my life is my message. And to close this out, I'll leave you this. Stand up for Multnomah County employees in our communities now. Stop disappearing when the alarms are blaring. Stop letting programs crumble in plain sight while the people holding this entire county together are wrung dry, dismissed, and treated as expendable. Step up and take the accountability you keep dodging. Fight for staff, fight for safety, fight for honesty, and fight to create a better place. And stop abandoning workers to clean up the mess alone. Lead like livelihoods, futures, and lives depend on you, because they do. When workers are harmed, the public also suffers the consequences you were too hesitant to confront. This is the truth you avoided, and now you're left to reckon with the fact that I survived. And to those who have been harmed, I see you and I believe you. Thank you. I want you to know my heart is open, whether you want to talk, sit together quietly.
Did we lose them, Tasia?
Hello?
Okay. Did we? Next up? No, they cut me off. And now I leave you this. Leadership requires a spine.
Okay, next up we have Desmond Kavanaugh.
Jessica, I'm leaving you chatter teeth at the front desk.
Tasia, the person was down in the room.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Tasia.
Desmond, you're up.
Okay. Hello, my name is Desmond Kavanaugh. I come to you today with concerns. I own a local food truck, and one of the things that I've been doing for quite a while now is driving around to the industrial areas, because it's often very hard for those guys to get out for a good lunch, a good meal at lunchtime. They have about a half an hour to do so. So we service the area. Our prices are going up for our permits by 33%. I understand that there was a pause put on by the county on raising those rates because of what was going on with the pandemic. But the problem is a 33% raise all at once, just to retroactively cover that lost cost, it doesn't help us in any way, because what I've seen around the county is the Freightliner truck plant down on Swan Island. Of their 220 employees, let 165 go at the start of this summer. Those guys aren't coming back. That's a whole bunch of people that have lost a good job. We saw King Shoes also down on the island, completely left the state. They're gone. They took manufacturing away. It's every one of the other businesses down there. They're running on skeleton crews. There is no extra money right now. And to be asking us to come back and retroactively cover all of the lost causes, that's a little bit ridiculous. A 5% raise, like as is normal annually, I guess I can understand. But when the county hasn't done anything for us to show economic improvement, and I mean, we haven't seen that. How do you expect me to feel about that when you ask me to pay more, yet there's less and less? We give huge tax breaks to the billionaires around here. The Ritz-Carlton, sorry, realize where I am in this building right now, just across the river in downtown, is a prime example of that. Where is their back end of the deal in covering homeless services, housing for people that can't afford it? That building is at like 28% occupancy. What tax revenue is that bringing in for the county? Very little. It's doing nothing for economic growth. And I see this time and time again, yet I don't think I was ever informed that there was going to be meetings to discuss a 33% raise in the cost of our annual permits. The roads are terrible. I drive on them all the time. My job is to fix my pizza truck, not to actually operate it. And I would like somebody to respond to this at some point. My email, I'm sure, is with the county at this point. I have called every single commissioner asking for a call back. Just please, at some point, respond to me. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Injured and Pissed Off.
My name is Richard. Before I start, I'm concerned about a man that when I was in the Northrop Salvation Army shelter, there was a man with a wheelchair, and he was so bad off that all he could do was sit in his wheelchair for the night. Clearly, he needed either a means of being able to get to the bed or to have a hospital bed, such as myself. I'm sure that he had spinal cord injuries. It wasn't just, you know, a foot problem or leg problem. And now for December 3rd, I'm talking to the city. That's Wednesday, I believe. Anyways, Willamette Week, uninvited guest. If you look that up, there's four words on Google. It doesn't show a picture of myself. In fact, if you use Google City of Portland Injured and Pissed Off, it comes up as nothing but just links about my speeches at City Hall, but there isn't a single image on the internet showing a picture of myself. My name's very unusual. They usually spell it off, spell it wrong. Pissed off is one word. I told a paralyzed man my name, and I explained that I went to court to have it changed, and I spell pissed off as one word, just to piss off the doctors more, and he just laughed and laughed and laughed. And I bet you he hadn't laughed being paralyzed. It's not fun and enjoyment. I'm being treated a lot better now in a motel room, as I said before. And in fact, I looked at a housing situation, and I'm just not sure if I want to go to that care facility. Is my time up?
Yes, time.
Thank you.
Thank you. That is everyone I have signed up for public testimony.
All right. Thank you very much, Tasia. We'll move on to our regular agenda. We have had a request to move R6 up to be the first item today. Is there any objection to that? Okay, Tasia, can we move forward with R6, please?
R6, ratification of collective bargaining agreement 2025 to 2029 between Multnomah County and the Multnomah County Prosecuting Attorneys Association.
May I have a motion?
So moved.
Right. I believe we had a motion from Commissioner Brim Edwards and a second from Commissioner Jones Dixon. All right, so I really appreciate all of the progress that has been made in bringing us to this Item today where we are ratifying the collective bargaining agreement with the Multnomah County Prosecuting Attorneys Association. And I'm glad that we have Matt and Sessa here to speak to this, as well as District Attorney Vasquez. So Sessa, I'll turn it over to you first.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Matt Davies. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm a labor relations manager. With me is Sessa Diaz, Interim Chief Human Resources Officer for the county. Thank you for having us today. I'm here to request board ratification for the tentative agreement reached in bargaining with the Multnomah County Prosecuting Attorneys. They are represented by MCPAA, the Multnomah County Prosecuting Attorneys Association. I served as lead negotiator for the county for these negotiations. I want to take a quick moment to thank members of both the union and the management bargaining teams for their dedication and hard work during this bargaining session. Both parties exhibited a strong commitment to reach a deal through collaboration and professionalism. We appreciate the support of the board, MCPAA, and the district attorney in reaching this agreement. The county and MCPAA entered into negotiations for a new collective bargaining agreement on March 5th, 2025, and we met for three sessions. After those three sessions, the parties entered into mediation on October 20th, 2025. After a successful mediation session, the parties reached a tentative agreement on a new four-year collective bargaining agreement. MCPAA ratified this agreement on October 28th, and now the agreement is before the board for ratification. The successor CBA covers a four-year term, effective retroactively to July 1 of 2025 and expiring on June 30th of 2029. Key provisions of this agreement include a cost of living increase of 4.4%, effective 7/1/25. This number was reached by adding the 2.4% CPI COLA of the fiscal year with two additional 1% increases to recognize that prosecuting attorneys did not receive a COLA higher than the county's typical 4% in fiscal year 23 and fiscal year 24, as other bargaining units at the county did. Additionally, the CBA provides for a one-time retention incentive of $2,500 for all deputy district attorneys active at the time of contract ratification. The rationale behind this retention bonus is the same as the additional COLA percentages. In previous fiscal years, other bargaining units received this retention bonus while MCPAA was still mid-contract. For the rest of the fiscal years covered by the contract, wages will reflect a 1 to 4% COLA increase. We added a new bilingual pay at 3% and a call-out premium of 5% for select attorneys in the homicide unit, Unit C, which covers robbery, burglary, gun crimes, and vehicular homicides, and for the MDT, or the multidisciplinary team. These attorneys are expected to respond after hours to call-outs. We lowered the years of service for longevity. We increased sick leave accrual, increased vacation accrual for those employees with the lowest service at the county, and we funded a privacy protection program for deputy district attorneys. Thank you again, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Matt. Appreciate that. Thank you so much for being here. I wanted to give DA Vasquez a chance to speak as well.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Chair and Commissioners. I just really appreciate being able to address you. I really want to just express my gratitude to the board and to Labor Relations, and of course to MCPAA leadership and the bargaining team. In particular, I know that Matt Davies put in a tremendous amount of work and leadership as being the lead negotiator. I truly believe that the agreement we have with Multnomah County and MCPAA reflects a shared commitment to the strength, strengthening our public safety system, supporting the people that carry out the county's justice mission every day. I sincerely believe I have an amazing team here at the DA's office, and this agreement reflects that. And these are our county employees that are really out there every day and night and weekends carrying out this mission. This is really something that when they are handling the most sensitive, complex, and high impact legal work in the county and really across the state, they are leaders. And their decisions are carrying out both legal, ethical, and community level implications that we are trying our best to move forward our community in a healthy and safe manner as we bring forward compassionate accountability. I would really just like to take the opportunity to acknowledge that this has been a partnership between labor relations, the union leadership, and my office, and I really appreciate the county's work in this area. It was one that I know everyone approached with a great deal of professionalism and a genuine interest in creating an agreement that supports kind of the county's financial realities, but honors the needs of our employees and strengthens our shared mission. You know, our office works is fundamentally to improve the health and safety of Multnomah County residents. And this agreement ensures that we will have a stable, capable, and well-supported team of prosecutors to carry out that mission. In closing, I would just like to say again, thank you for your support and partnership. We value the board's leadership and look forward to continuing to collaborate and to work to make Multnomah County a safer, more equitable place for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your words, DA Vasquez, and for your partnership in getting us to this point as well. Thank you. Tayshia, did we receive any public testimony on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. And there were, Matt, were there any other presenters or was that all for today?
That's it.
Okay, great. We'll go to the board to see who has any comments. We'll start with Commissioner Moyer.
Oh, I'm good. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you. I just wanted to also appreciate Sessa and her team for this work and some of the responses to questions that I had about just how this all kind of functions and the budget and some components that I think we as a board need to talk further about. Just in how we want to plan for contracts in the future. And I also just want to shout out, I didn't talk directly with Adam Brown, but appreciate the work that I know you've been doing with our budget team to really figure out making sure we can move this forward and these employees can get what's been negotiated. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Bram Edwards.
I don't have any questions, but I just want to share appreciation for all the parties for bringing this here today. I'm looking forward to providing my full support and also the follow-up budget support that's needed to support the implementation.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Jones-Dixon.
No questions. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Yeah. And just again, just want to share my thanks to everyone involved in this, from labor relations to the folks who were representing the MCPAA and as well as like folks in the district attorney's office. Just appreciate that we're able to get to this point where we have a contract ratified and moved forward with. Thank you. Tayshia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes. The agreement is approved. Thank you, everyone.
R1, resolution approving the sale of the Albina Library Annex located at 236 Northeast Knott Street, Portland, to a resident purchaser.
May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Commissioner Singleton moves. Commissioner Bram Edwards seconds. Approval of R1. So we have several folks from both the library and DCA here today. Who's going to be kicking us off?
I will go ahead and kick us off. Good morning, Chair. Thanks, good morning, Commissioners. My name is Katie Shifley. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the library's finance and facilities director. I'm joined today by my colleagues, John and Greg from the Department of County Assets. And we are here today to seek your approval of a resolution to approve the sale of the Albina Annex property to a residential purchaser. If we could go to the next slide, please. So the Albina Annex property, which you can see on the left side of the screen there, is located at 236 Northeast Knott Street, right next to the Albina Library. The property itself is about a 1,400 square foot single family residence built in the early 1900s, and it's on a 7,500 square foot parcel. Next slide, please. The property was purchased by the county back in 2022 for $575,000 using library capital bond funds. At that time, consideration was given to demolishing the house and using the land as green space right next to the Albina Library. But ultimately, it was determined not to pursue that idea given the ongoing operational costs that were going to be associated with that additional land. The house was used by the general contractor of the Albina Library construction project during the duration of the library construction project. And I'm going to now turn it over to John, who's going to kind of walk us through the process that we've taken to date through the disposition process.
Thanks, Katie. Good morning, Chair Vega Peterson and commissioners. My name is John Poninen. I use he, him pronouns. I'm the facilities planner and space planning analyst for facilities and property management, a division within the Department of County Assets. It's good to be with you today. On January 16th, 2025, the board approved a resolution declaring the property surplus and having a 60-day public comment period to collect ideas from the community regarding this property's disposition. So four comments were submitted during the public comment period, and among those submitted, three made offers on the property. The offers fell between $50,000 and $350,000, well below estimated market value. The bond finance rules require that the property be sold at market value if sold before the end of fiscal year 2027 in order for the proceeds to support the library capital bond program. Next slide, please. The chair approved DCA to list the house on the private market through a broker, and a marketing plan encouraged those interested in the property to make an offer during the first 2 weeks of the listing period. Multnomah County engaged Apex Real Estate Partners to lead the sale. Before advertising the property on the open market, Apex conducted targeted outreach to many brokers, nonprofit organizations, and community impact groups to ensure that they and their clients had the opportunity to consider the property. Next slide, please. Once listed on the open market, the property generated interest from two qualified parties who submitted offers. The agreed upon amount of $535,000 was reached after negotiations between the party that made the highest offer prior to the inspection period, which will result in an adjustment to the sale price. The family stated they intend to remodel the home and occupy it as their primary residence. Next slide, please. And in consultation with its real estate brokerage firm on this matter, Apex, the library, and the Department of County Assets recommend sale of the property to a residential purchaser. We are happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate all the work that's gone into this and helping to walk us through this today, John. Thank you so much. Tasia, do we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Madam Chair, we do not.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to the board for any questions or comments on this. Commissioner Singleton, I'll start with you, and I just want to appreciate your partnership as we were moving through this part process and staying in good communication about this property.
Thank you. I have questions. I appreciate all the work that's gone into this and the work to really make my request of looking at the opportunity to provide community benefit when the county disposes of land. Despite us not being able to necessarily do that to the full implementation, I think we might have liked to with some of the restrictions on the bond. I know that there was extra effort made to ensure that some community members had access to and opportunities to engage in looking at purchasing this land. I also just want to say, I think that the work that you all did will really help me with some of the effort I'm making to look at opportunities to update our disposition of land processes and policies so that we are looking at opportunities for these types of community benefits in the future. So thank you all so much, and more to come on that. I'm sure I'll reach out to you with your thoughts as I work on updating that policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Brem Edwards.
No questions. I'm supportive of this agenda item.
Thank you. Commissioner Jones Dixon.
Yep. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. But no questions, but it was my understanding that one of the folks that put in an offer was $400,000, not $350,000. Is that correct?
Could you restate that, Commissioner?
Oh, I was just saying, yeah. Sorry, I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me clear now?
Yep.
All right, perfect. I was just saying that it was my understanding that one of the folks that put in an offer was $400,000, not $350,000. It was funding, so that's clear on the record.
There was Commissioner Jones Jason, this is Greg Cockert, TM Assistant Director for Planning, Design, and Construction for Facilities. We had a very late offer after we had negotiated with the current buyer of the property that came in that we that was at 400,000, but it wasn't something we considered at that time. But thanks for the question.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Supportive. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Moyer.
No questions. I wish the new owner the best in their remodel. I'm on year 4.5 of mine. So good luck.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, thanks again. Thanks to the teams at the library and DCA for all the work on this and getting this to a point. And you know, the new owners are going to be right next door to a really incredible library, and that's something that's pretty cool. So thank you so much. Tasia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes. The resolution is adopted.
R2, budget modification number HD-006-26, adding 3 new positions to meet growing patient demands at the healthcare center.
May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Commissioner Singleton moves. Commissioner Moyer seconds. Approval of R2. And I believe we have Hassan Bader here from ICS to talk us through this one.
Yes, good morning. My name is Hassan Bader, and I am the Finance and Budget Manager for ICS. And I am here to seek your approval for a budget modification that will approve increasing our visit revenue. Next one, please. We are seeking your approval to increase our visit revenue by $428,794, and that is resulting from increased client assignments. And we are using that revenue to add 3 new FTEs. Two of them our medical assistants at Fernhill Health Center to support medical appointments, immunization, patient outreach, and clinical library. And the third one is a business analyst senior to clinical systems information team, and that will support increasing need for standardized training of new and existing staff on front office registration, revenue cycle workflows, and support improvements to help onboarding of health center staff. Next one, please. Revenue will be non-governmental grants operating. This will increase visit revenue by $428,794. And the expenses are for personnel, regular employees. The increase will be $370,670. And the indirect expense associated with the personnel increase will be about $58,124. Next one, please. So risk management fund services reimbursement to the risk management fund will increase by $82,205, and general fund contingency increase will be $15,496 due to central indirect rate, and supplies will increase of $42,628 due to departmental indirect increase. Any questions?
Thank you so much for this overview of this budget modification. Tasia, did we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions from the board on this item? or any comments?
None for me.
Okay, thank you. It doesn't look like we have any. Thank you so much, Hassan, for walking us through this. It's pretty straightforward, and I'm really glad to hear that our new Fernhill Clinic is having such a positive impact on the community and drawing so many new members.
Yes.
Tasia, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Moyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes, the budget modification is approved.
R3, budget modification number D, sorry, budget, I'm going to start over. R3, budget modification number HD-008-26, additional $123,840 from Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Addressing Conditions to Improve Population Health. Grant FY 2025 rollover.
May I have a motion?
I move.
Second.
Commissioner Moyer moves, Commissioner Jones-Dixon seconds, approval of R3. And we have Kirsten Aird from Public Health. Good morning.
Good morning. Kirsten Aird, she, her pronouns, Public Health Director. So we are here to present, and do you all have the presentation or do you need me to put up the presentation?
Tasia, I'll get it up in a second.
I'm pulling it up.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. We want to make sure we see the slides.
Wonderful. Okay, so next slide. This is going to be the first of three you're going to hear today. We're starting with the good news, which is additional resources for nutrition work, culturally specific nutrition work, where we are going to be continuing to fund our contractors to continue on with their work. It is additional funds that have been put into program offer 453 and basically continues what we've been doing as part of a 3-year grant for the CDC. The grant does come to the third year ends in September. Next slide. Trista, I'm gonna.
Thank you, Kirsten. My name is, for the record, my name is Trista Zugel. I use she, her pronouns. I am the budget director for the Multnomah County Health Department. And I'm gonna go over the dollar slides for the public health presentations this morning. For this budget.
Hey, Trista, can you hold on just 1 second? Is this the right slide presentation?
Oh, no, this is not.
Okay.
This is
Mom was like the sweetest person ever.
Anyway, Julie, Commissioner Brim Edwards, you're not on mute. There we go. Okay. Tasia, could you just read? So this is the budget modification 008-26, I believe.
Yes.
So sorry, just bear with us for 1 second so we can get the right. There we go.
Thank you.
And, then I believe we're on the slide that has to do with the dollar amounts, Tasia.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you so much, Tasia. So I'm not going to go through all of the relatively small dollar, some of the relatively small dollar amounts on this slide. I just want to note that the key increases from this budget modification are $148,800 per pass-through. For the contracted work that is being done and the professional services, the same. And then small changes around supplies and personnel expense to round out the item. And that is all. Unless folks have questions about the technical aspects.
Thank you so much, Kirsten and Trista. Tasia, do we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
All right. Are there any questions or comments from the board on this budget modification?
I have a question and a comment.
Thank you, Commissioner Singleton.
So I'm just curious how, if we feel good about spend down, it looks like from the materials, there was more carryover than expected or that maybe anticipated. So how are you all feeling about the ability to spend this, fully spend this contract or this grant down?
Thank you, Commissioner Singleton, Kirsten Aird for the record. We are on track. We are ready to do this. Part of it was a delay in some of the contracting that we were trying to get done last year. So the anticipation is for them to go all the way through the grant. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you. I just want to say I'll definitely be interested in final report and any guidelines or recommendations as we continue to think about some of the bigger conversations at the county around food and food security and all of these components. So keep me looped in, please, and the whole board looped in as this all moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you so much. I think, you know, this is really timely as a board, as a community. We've been having so many conversations and just talking a lot about food security and access and nutrition. And we know and we've seen so clearly that the need is high. So I'm glad that we had the opportunity to hear a little bit more about the work that's happening and with the with all of the things that are happening with the racial and ethnic approaches to community health program, which has been such an integral part of the county's response and the county's work within community around nutrition and health education. And I think that this budget modification is more coincidental than intentional related to the acute food crisis that we're having. And that we've been focused on lately, but I really am pleased that we get to talk about and highlight this work today. So thank you so much for being here. Teja, can we have a roll call vote?
Madam Chair, before we vote, I just wanted to apologize to the presenter that I wasn't on mute. Sorry, people couldn't see that I was in the meeting. I apologize. Sorry about that.
Oh, thank you so much, Commissioner. I really appreciate that. With virtual meetings, those things happen. So thank you so much for taking the time to do that. All right, Tasia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes, sorry, navigating too many screens at once.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes, the budget modification is approved.
R4, budget modification number HD-009-26, Rockwood Environmental Justice Federal Grant Termination, $455,075 and one FTE eliminated.
All right, thank you, Tasia. So now we're shifting to a topic that I am less pleased that we have to address than the last item. You know, this was a grant that was terminated by the federal government. It is profoundly disappointing. It will definitely have impacts on our community.
I'm sorry, excuse me. Can we have a motion in a second?
Yes, we can totally do that.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner, thank you, Tasia, for keeping us honest. Commissioner Singleton moves. Commissioner Jones-Dixon seconds. Approval of R4. And yes, I will reiterate the point that this is a less pleasant one. Because this is a grant cancellation by the federal administration. And, you know, we went for this grant and got it because we know that the Rockwood neighborhood specifically has high exposure to heat and barriers to resilience are you know, really challenging in that neighborhood, including that it's outside Portland. So it's not eligible for PSEF resources for resiliency projects. And so I just want to reiterate, you know, that this work is incredibly important and has had benefits for the community. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Kirsten, but I just wanted to note that this is, you know, this is something that we're definitely going to see the effects of.
Yes, absolutely. Again, Kirsten Aird, she, her pronouns, public health director. This does not bring me joy to share with you today. It is a very meaningful grant that will have significant health outcomes and delay the work that we've been doing around climate resiliency. So the termination impacts program offer 437. I'm on the next slide. So 437, the weatherization work that we were doing, the training of community health workers, so folks who were able to get into homes, checking in on folks for health reasons, and then also able to address some of the climate issues and concerns around heat So not being able to build out that workforce as much, job training for neighbors or a lot of youth that were involved in this, really great way for them to build up their resumes. And it does impact one vacant program specialist. We did not fill it when we got notice that we were gonna lose this. We did leave it vacant and we were unsuccessful in our appeal. So it is going to be a significant loss, particularly in the East County area. Krista, I'm going to turn it over to you for the next slide to talk about the budget details.
Thank you, Kirsten. Kirsten mentioned, this budget modification recognizes the loss of a roughly $455,000 federal grant. Also, a reduction of personnel expenses of $203,000, a loss of indirect expense and revenue of $31,752, and a loss of direct client assistance of $44,520 and $171,078 of professional services. And that is all.
Any other slides, Kirsten?
There's one more slide regarding the risk fund.
I apologize, my error. It's a loss of revenue to the risk fund of $38,000 and changes to the budgets relative in the general fund budgets relative to the indirect that was collected from this grant. At the time of the termination, the division had just begun the second year of this grant. To date, the division has spent about $220,000 of these funds, so lost more than $700,000 of anticipated revenue. However, this budget modification acknowledges the loss of what was budgeted in fiscal year 2026. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Trista. Tayshia, did we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
All right. Do we have any questions or comments from the board on this item?
I have a couple.
Thank you, Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you all, not only for this work, but I know this is a hard one. I've just got a couple of questions. On the community health worker training, do we now have curriculum that was developed through this work? I see a head nod. Yes. Have we explored or will you explore opportunities to leverage that curriculum into other existing community health worker trainings?
Yeah, Commissioner Singleton, thank you. Kirsten Aird for the record. Absolutely. I think we're really trying to figure out how we balance continuing to leverage what currently exists and what we can do, to your point, building it into other community health worker trainings, and also not over commit doing more with less. So who does the trainings? How do we balance that? I think is still all what we're trying to figure out, but we do have the content. Yes.
Awesome. And hopefully there's connection with some of the existing training courses that may be able to pull that content in without it being a resource need of the county. The other question I had was if you all have or plan to engage with Metro. They are in the process of doing a bit of a roadshow with their updated cooling corridors study. And I think there could be some opportunities for some of this work to be picked up or leveraged into that work. So if that's not something you've already seen, I would really encourage us to do that, because some of it is overlap, not all of it, right? But some of the work that this grant was funding would overlap there.
Yes, Commissioner Singleton. I'm not familiar with that. I don't want to say that the program isn't familiar with that, but I will definitely tie back in with them and make sure that we are tracking on that and able to get tied into the good work that they're doing as well.
Awesome, thank you. And then my last question is, in the materials, it's stated that there may be future opportunities to appeal at another step of appeal. Is that something we're keeping track of and plan to do?
We are planning on doing whatever will be absolutely possible for us to look at, and we are working with Rob on that. I think it could be many years out before we're able to get something figured out. But yes, as opportunities make themselves available, we are very interested.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, I think you've summed it up, Chair, as far as your remarks. I just want to, again, just say thank you, Director Aird and team, for just making a good faith effort. And really, really appreciated your questions, Commissioner. Just wanted to say, like, how are we carrying over the work that you and what we've learned already throughout the departments and really with what we have internally. So it's a disappointment, but again, thank you.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Commissioner. Thank you so much. All right. Great. I don't hear anyone else with questions or comments. Tayshia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brennan Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The budget modification is approved.
R5, budget modification number HD-001-26, $523,041, and 1 FTE, Healthy Families Grant Reduction.
May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Commissioner Singleton moves. Commissioner Brem Edwards seconds. Approval of R5. Kirsten, it is the Kirsten show today. Please go ahead.
Another one not with good news. Kirsten Aird, she, her pronouns, public health director for the record. The second slide, this is still the climate one. So we're on the healthy families. So it's 011-26. Yeah, that one. Second slide, please. This is a significant reduction in grant funding. This primarily is from the state and a result of the corporate tax that funds the Student Success Act being lower than had anticipated, and the amount that goes to the Department of Learning, of Early Learning and Care. That's the grant that is the primary funder for our Healthy Families grant. And so as a result of that lower amount that we received, we are having to reduce, in order to do our very best to both think of equity and to hold harmless our programming to families, we worked with the community-based organizations to reduce the mental health supports that are for the home visitors, and then to reduce office supports that do a lot of the paperwork for the home visitors. And then one of the CBOs was struggling to hire their last home visitor. And so that is also that's vacant, but it is not being filled. And so what that ultimately results in is support for the home visiting workforce, and then 28 to 30-ish families will not be able to be served by not hiring that vacant position. And it results in one position for us at the state at the county that does the eligibility screening for healthy families specifically and gets families into and then referred to the CBOs for support. Next slide. And the next two are for Trista.
Thank you, Kirsten. As Kirsten mentioned, this budget modification recognizes the loss of grants provided to the health department for the Healthy Families Program. It also recognizes the loss of $161,000 in personnel expense, roughly $7,000 in supplies, and most notably a loss of pass-through and program support funding of roughly $327,000. For regular employees, this notes a slight because we took a position and moved it into the general fund. In this budget modification, this recognizes an increase of $28,428 in expense. The overall expense for that position was taken from direct client assistance to keep certain positions whole. A risk fund reimbursement, a decline of $27,720 with indirect impacts of $6,744 to the county and $18,556 to the department.
Okay, thank you so much for all the details on that one. I believe that's the last slide. Tayshia, did we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, do we have any questions or comments from the board or Trista or Kirsten?
I do, and it's just a bit of a marker that I'll want to talk about this some more when we're thinking about 27 budget. Particularly, I'm interested in what are the impacts of the reduction of that full FTE doing the screening at the hospital. The materials say we expect there to be, but I would be interested if we have data of what it looked like before this position existed or when this position existed versus after. I think it may be worth having some conversation here as well when we think about some of our sanctuary policy work and if there is any particular resource ask or need that matches where we might see reductions in some of this work with the same impacted communities. So I just want to kind of put that into the ether so we can keep thinking about it and talking about it. And then similarly, there was a piece around another position with home visiting. So generally, I'm just going to want to know if we can and have tracked some of the different outcomes for community based on the impacts of this reduction so that we can be thinking about if or how we might want to add anything back either during the budget or again during our conversations that might of the places where this might impact our immigrant and refugee communities. So thank you for the detail and just wanted to make sure to let you know I might have some more follow-up offline.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other questions or comments? Okay, I don't hear any. I just wanted to thank the health department and as well as the community-based organizations who are impacted by this cut. I know that you've been working for several months on how to come up with a plan that would have the least impact for families, knowing that there, of course, would still be impacts because of this. Really thinking about equity concerns around this, the strengths of the different community-based organizations, and just appreciate those conversations that have been happening. And you know, I think this item and the item before really shows the impacts when changes in decisions or directions or lack of revenue at the federal or state level really does have impacts that come down and directly affect the folks in our community for whom these services are really critical and really beneficial. So, thank you so much for all the work on these today. Tayshia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega-Peterson?
Aye. The budget modification is approved. Thank you. Thanks, Public Health.
R7. Resolution approving amendment to an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Portland to collect and administer the personal income tax for the Preschool for All program.
May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Singleton moves, Commissioner Moyer seconds, approval of R7. I know that we have Eric Arellano here today, who is bringing the resolution forward. So I want to go ahead and turn it over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair and Commissioners. For the record, Eric Arellano, Chief Financial Officer. Hopefully you can hear me okay. Yes, I'm here to request an approval on amendment to our IGA with the City of Portland for the administration of our Preschool for All tax. This disagreement before you today is an agreement that originated in 2021 when we first implemented the preschool for all tax. The agreement is a 10-year agreement. It goes through January 2031. The amendment before you today does not necessarily extend that agreement. It just makes a change that would be effective fiscal year 2026 forward. So if you approve this request today, the changes being proposed would be effective or retroactive to July 1st forward. But again, this does not necessarily amend the term of the agreement over its 10-year term. And just at a high level, this agreement, like I said, is for the administration of the Preschool for All tax, which incorporates them actually assessing the tax on our behalf, actually doing the collections on our behalf, essentially applying our tax code, our administrative procedures, handling tax deficiencies, appeals, everything that you do in terms of actually administering a tax. But I just wanted to kind of give a high level of what the City of Portland does, but those components are actually in the IGA in detail. In terms of the proposed amendment, the actual red lines are really, really minor, but they are significant. The change being proposed is in the section that is the payment for the city. We're actually proposing to increase what we refer to as our not to exceed amount. So essentially what the City of Portland can charge us, again, beginning fiscal year 26 forward. And I'll get to more details around the specifics around that proposed change. I would also note that there's a minor change in Exhibit 1, which lays out the first 5 years of the IGA in terms of estimated costs. We incorporated a table at the very bottom that just reflects our actual costs that we've incurred over the first 5 years. So just to be clear about exactly what is being proposed in terms of changes for this IGA. So again, before I get into specific details as to the actual amount of the increase, and then getting into some more specifics around the history, but also of the numbers, but also the projections moving forward, I wanted to provide a bit of a history and context in terms of this agreement. And so, like I said, this agreement first originated in 2021. That was when the voters passed the initiative and were trying to stand up the Preschool for All tax administration program. At the time, Multnomah County explored various options in terms of actually administering the tax, which incorporated assessing whether we could do it or the state of Oregon can do it or the city's revenue bureau. And the options of ourselves or the state of Oregon weren't options that were available to us to stand up in the short term. Those were not options. And one of them was much more expensive than we currently have with the City of Portland. So I kind of wanted to just to set that context. The other thing that I would say is that when we chose to go forward with moving with the City of Portland, we knew that obviously we had a long-standing relationship with the City of Portland in terms of administering our business income tax, which is a separate agreement that we have with the City of Portland. But also the City of Portland actually administered our iTax back in 2003, if I'm correct, which was for a 3-year period. And then also at the time, Supportive Housing Services Measure had just passed, and City of Portland was working with Metro just essentially stand up their supportive housing services personal income tax. So when we explored it with the city, it seemed like the timing was good and for them to actually take two programs together and stand them up together. So just wanted to provide a little bit of context in terms of timing of this IGA. Having said that, I did want to note, and this is context for what we're going to propose, is that the City of Portland essentially administers these personal income taxes together. It doesn't necessarily say, here's your preschool, here's your supportive housing. It kind of takes the whole personal income tax program together. And at the time that we negotiated the agreement, they provided an estimate in terms of their overall cost for administration. But in part of that negotiation, we laid out how their costs would be proportioned out. And costs would be proportioned out based on total revenue collections, between the different programs, Preschool for All and Supportive Housing. And at the time that we negotiated the agreement, we estimated that Preschool for All would be about 47% of tax revenues, and that supportive housing would be about 53% of revenues. What's actually happened over the first 3 years of actuals is that the Preschool for All tax has been about 52% of collections, and supportive housing has been about 48% of tax collections. And so for that reason of we were off in our estimates, and again, it was our best estimates at the time, it's actually created this artificial cap where the city can't charge us more for their actual costs. And so there's a need to bump up that artificial not to exceed amount so they can charge us for our proportion of costs that the city is incurring for administering this program. I will note and be very clear about this, that this change being proposed today is not necessarily because the city of Portland's adding staffing or adding cost or enhancing scope of services or making investments in their system. These are current costs that they've had that they just can't proportion out to us based on our current structure of the IGA for the tax. So just wanted to kind of set that history in context as to where we were and kind of where we're at moving forward with this proposal. So so the next thing I'm going to do is kind of walk through a spreadsheet that goes through a bit of the history of the actuals and then goes through the proposed change. So I'm going to, Tasia, is there any way you can zoom that in a little bit? Okay, thank you. Thank you. My apologies. So looking at this this attachment here from left to right, and looking at the top left-hand section, you could see from fiscal year 21 all the way through 25, you can see budgeted expenses. These are essentially at the time of negotiation in 2021. These were the estimated costs for administering the Preschool for All tax, and it's broken down into three components: ongoing operations, which is mostly staffing. And then there's what we refer to as ITS costs. It's essentially costs for their system, their tax system, and maintenance. And there's an actual debt service component that rolls off after 10 years. And then there's one-time implementation costs. And as you can see, these costs through the first 3 years, there was one-time only cost of about $14.4 million for the first 3 years, and that rolls off. Then I'm going to ask you to look a little bit below that. That's actual expenses, again, and broken out to the three categories. And as you can see here, the actual expenses that we've incurred over the first 5 years have been less than expected. For almost every single year, actually every year. It looks like in fiscal year 25, our actuals are higher than our budget, but that's because there was a late billing from fiscal year 24 that spilled into 25 of $523,000. But if you move that over to 24, you can see that every single year, we've actually incurred less costs than we originally anticipated. So the total of that's about $8.9 million. That we've costs have been less than expected. So I don't want to say that necessarily the city's underbilled us. This has just been based on, you know, we estimated at the time what it would be, and our costs have been less than expected. It's been primarily driven by the fact that one-time implementation costs were much less than expected, but also there was some ramp up in terms of system expenses for the program. So I'm going to stop there for a quick second before I go to the proposed amendment and see if you have any questions on that existing first 5 years.
Thank you so much, Eric. Do we have questions for Eric?
No. Okay, so I'll move to the proposed piece. So looking to the right of that spreadsheet from fiscal year 26 through 30, this is essentially if the board were to approve this amendment, this IGA, this is what essentially we estimate would happen with us bumping up the not to exceed amount. So I currently in fiscal year 26 budgeted about $6.8 million for administration costs. And with this trying to right size our proportion to the county and increasing not to exceed amount, like I talked about, We estimate the costs for fiscal year 26 to be about $7.3 million, which is about a $553,000 increase for the year. And it's not just a one-time only increase. We figured that this will continue to carry through for future years in terms of that bumping up that not to exceed threshold. That annual amount will be upped by CPI year after year. But in this visual, we provided a bit of a cushion to kind of give us some headroom in the IGA. So you can see kind of an average 6% increase over the next couple years. You can see the cost increasing up to $9.4 million at 2030. And then, like I said, the IGA expires in January 2031. So I didn't include a half year there. I just went out to fiscal year 30 just for a visual. And again, the 27 through 30 are just estimates at this point. The 26 is probably the most correct estimate as to what we think this impact will be in fiscal year 26 if you approve the proposed change. So again, the proposed change is to essentially amend the payment to the city language in the IGA that essentially says that beginning fiscal year 26 all the way through the term of the agreement, we're increasing the not to exceed amount to $9.8 million. That gives us some headroom for them to essentially allocate our portion of the costs that they're incurring for administering both programs based on our revenue collections. So it gives them that space where they're not running into a situation where they can't allocate costs that they're currently incurring as part of our Multnomah County costs. I will note that the City of Portland charges actuals. They do not charge us budgeted amounts. Budgeted amounts are just estimates, but they charge us what they actually incur. And the City of Portland does provide information to myself and my office around those annual costs that are incurred. So we're making sure that we're only billed for actual costs for every year that we have this administration agreement with the City of Portland. And the final thing that I'll say before I open up for questions and comments is that, I'm obviously recommending that you approve this IGA amendment. But one of the consequences of this not being approved is it could disrupt services, because the City of Portland would have to reduce services to reflect their actual costs. And so we worked really hard over the last couple of years to improve our collection activities, but also to improve our communication with taxpayers around administration. And I really don't want to disrupt that. I don't think it's in our best interest to do that. And so that's one of the main reasons why I'm recommending to move forward with this. The second part of that is that, as you well know, the TAG group's been working on various tax scenarios, potential tax scenarios, and changing the structure of our preschool for all tax. And some of those scenarios involve some administrative changes that would be significant in terms of actually operationalizing those, and that would need support from the City of Portland to actually carry those out in the near future. So again, I think having an ability to kind of maintain our current service level, I think would be helpful to any potential changes that could come in the near future around the work of the TAG, but also the recommendations that come from this board in the near future. And then one final thing I would note, if the board were to approve this proposed amendment, I would have to do a budget modification to reflect the increase of 6.8 to 7.3 million in fiscal year 26. If you were to approve this, I would bring an action shortly after. I did not want to bring an action today because I wanted to make sure that the board was assess this IGA separately from a budget action before we take any budget modification forward. So from there, I'll open up for any questions or comments you may have.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate that. Before we get to questions or comments, Tasia, was there any public testimony on this item?
Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'll open it up to board members for any questions or comments. For Eric. All right, I'm not hearing any.
Chair, I just wanted to thank Eric and appreciate the work done. I know this has been an ongoing negotiation for some time, and I just appreciate your effort in making sure that the county, and I know that the county is well represented in those conversations. So wanted to thank you for that, but also making time to do briefings with board members beforehand so that we could really dig into and understand some of the history of how we got to now. So thank you for taking that time and answering my questions.
Madam Chair, I have a couple of questions for Eric.
Thank you. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Okay. Thanks for the presentation and also for the briefing and the going through the actual numbers with me, Eric. Just a question. I'm looking at the IGA and then taking into consideration your presentation. What is the size of the budget modification that you referenced that you would be bringing back, and what budget would that be coming out of?
So the increase for fiscal year 26 would be about $554,000. That would be the difference between what I budgeted currently at 6.8 million in fiscal year 26, and then the current estimate of if we were to approve this today for 26 would be about 7.3 million. Again, get to that 554,000. And to essentially fund that, we would have to take money from existing fund balance that Preschool for All has to essentially appropriate some of that money to fund this increase in terms of our administrative costs.
So it's not a general fund?
No.
Not be funded.
No. We take it from the preschool fund.
And this is just another question about the actual IGA in the agreement section 4 B, it has the language that's actually the changing the maximum amount of the no maximum annual compensation, and that it also adds a consumer price index change. So essentially what that language is doing is both rebasing and adding indexing based on the cost of living. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And why do we do that?
Oh, because we do that on various agreements we have, like for example with our business income taxes, because the cost of because a lot of the costs associated with administering the tax includes staffing that the city of Portland has, and their labor costs increase every year along with non-labor costs, and so we incorporate that CPI to reflect the increases that happen year after year with administering their costs and their expenses growing. So that's why it's incorporated into the IGA, and we've always had that standard both for this IGA and for other IGAs a similar manner.
So just standard practice of adding in a cost of living to acknowledge that real dollars have diminished in value.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. I'm gonna support this because I think it's the right thing to do based on my conversations with Eric. I do also, you know, it is concerning that the city of Portland, not necessarily the city of Portland per se, but that we are wrapping in a sort of colon cost of living increase and a rebasing for an entity, and we have not done that in a way I think that we should do it for the individuals who are actually paying the tax as well. I'm looking forward to what comes out of the tag. And you know, I know this is getting front loaded, so they're getting taken care of, but I would hope that we have some consistent practices in our tax and agreements that we have. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right, Eric, thank you so much for all your work on this with the city of Portland and getting this in front of us. And we'll look forward to the budget modification and getting that scheduled very, very soon.
Thank you, Chair and Commissioners.
Thank you. Tayshia, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Yes.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes, the resolution is approved. I'm sorry, the resolution is adopted. All right. That was our last item for today. Appreciate all the good work today. We have time for final announcements from the board. So I wanted to open it up to see who has anything. And just because we're virtual, I'll call on commissioners. Commissioner Jones-Dixon.
Just I've been at the AOC conference this last, over the last few days. It's been good as far as connecting with the folks, the various counties across the state. No other updates as of this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Broom Edwards.
I don't have anything. I'm here at the AOC conference with Commissioner Jones-Dixon.
Thanks so much. I'm glad you guys are representing Multnomah County down there and looking forward to the business meeting later this afternoon. Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you, Chair. I have a couple. One, I just wanted to make sure folks remember that tomorrow is National Trans Day of Remembrance, which is a day that we honor those trans people who have passed. It's too often that trans lives are taken in violence and prematurely. This year, we have seen an onslaught of anti-trans policies and rhetoric aimed at erasing trans lives, history, and contributions. Multnomah County has work to do to support our transgender and non-conforming staff. Misgendering, microaggressions, macroaggressions, and workplace hostility are actions that harm. And I urge the board to not forget that this time last year, the board formally passed a resolution in honor of Trans Day of Remembrance with clear asks that have not yet been fully implemented. Similar to what I said on Tuesday, as we spoke about updating our sanctuary policies, we need to be asking what it will take to implement what we proclaimed last year. I also want to thank PRISM and QTPOC for working with my team to make a proclamation for December. And lastly, on this, earlier this year, Black trans writer and activist Ms. Major Griffin Gracie joined our ancestors on October 13th, and I want to honor her by sharing two of her quotes. The first is, "I don't need permission to exist. I exist in spite of them." And the second is, "The world I'd like to see is where everyone gets to succeed. I want it to be where everyone gets a chance to be who they are. Then they can carry that forward and not back. That would be a good time to be here. I hope we all do our part and create a world that she wanted to see." I also just want to thank the health department. One of our consent agenda items included some work around grant incentives for behavioral healthcare workforce. I had the opportunity to attend the state's apprenticeship graduation for people in some different behavioral health programs. And I think there are lots of opportunities for the county to increase and further support our partnership with the apprenticeship program to really help leverage our needed behavioral health workforce, both in addictions and mental health care. And as a clinical social worker, these apprenticeship pathways are much more affordable for folks who are generally already working in the field. And I think we really need to find a way to tap into that opportunity. So I want to thank the health department for pre-thank them for some work. I'm going to ask them to continue to engage in with me on some potential opportunities to increase that partnership. And then I have a couple of events I wanted to share. Just a shout out to folks that there's the final community design advisory group meeting for the Earthquake Ready Burnside Bridge project is tonight. And so this is an in-person meeting at the Multnomah County Boardroom from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And encourage folks to engage. This will be the last meeting and want to appreciate the advisory group members for all of their work in supporting the county through the design phase. And then lastly, the expansion and renovation of the Portland Art Museum is about to come to a close, and there will be free admission from November 20th to 23rd. I'm particularly excited to visit the Black Art and Experiences Gallery. This central gallery is named after Thelma Johnson Street, who was a Portland artist, performer, educator, and foundational creative whose work paved the way for future generations. It's also important to shout out, not surprising, but a little disappointing, that this is actually the first gallery in a major art museum that will be named after a Black woman artist in the country. So just really encourage folks to get out there and visit the art museum and see some of the amazing new exhibits. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Singleton. Commissioner Moyer, any board comments today?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring attention to an issue that I have spoken a lot about, which is the pending healthcare crisis that our federal government is making significantly worse with their cuts to Medicaid. But Oregon is already experiencing real challenges with our healthcare system. The U.S. Department of Education did not help that issue this week when it decided to remove many classifications of healthcare professionals from their list of professional licensures, which actually impacts who can get student loans and to what amount. Apparently, according to the U.S. Department of Education, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and many other highly skilled medical professionals are no longer considered professional by the U.S. Department of Education, which will mean that people cannot access necessary amounts of student loans to pursue those degrees. That will have profound impacts on the individual's ability to seek medical care and find available professionals. It is incredibly important to have physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, physical therapists were on there, occupational therapists, people who are so vital to keeping our healthcare system functioning. And it feels, when you look at what was included and not included on the list of professionals, it very much felt like an attack on professions that are predominantly women, although not exclusively. Chiropractors remained on the list of professionals, which I'm fine with, but that is a predominantly male healthcare. MDs continue to be on the list. One that was heavily debated but did make the list was PhD psychologists, but not some of the vital frontline healthcare providers that many of us get our primary care or vital specialized care from. So I wanted to bring this up because I don't know how we navigate through for making sure that people have access to healthcare, particularly preventative medicine, as our federal government continues to throw barrier after barrier in the way of making healthcare affordable, accessible, and high quality.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Moore. I really appreciate you bringing this up and just talking about all the impacts that we are going to be seeing at so many different levels. So, and you know, we're already we saw some impacts in budget modifications, and we know we're going to see more. So, thank you for keeping that front of mind. I have a couple of things today. Just I wanted to share that tomorrow I am going to be sending out my budget guidance to our department directors, outlining my expectations for the fiscal year 26-27 Multnomah County budget. So, you know, this is an important kind of kickoff to our budget process, and I have complete faith in our department director's leadership and expertise. I'm looking forward to working with them to deliver on a budget that can meet the needs that we have in our community in this moment. Has been the case throughout my tenure as chair, the preparation for the FY26-27 budget is going to be rooted in Multnomah County's values and guided by a key set of principles, including equity in budgeting, strategic alignment to maximize core services, and comprehensive community engagement. What this means is that despite the pushback from a federal administration that's hostile to our values, Multnomah County is going to continue to center the goal of eliminating disparities and prioritizing services that are effective in meeting the needs of our most vulnerable populations. It also means that we are going to remain laser focused on aligning our work as one county in order to eliminate redundancies and increase efficiency and efficacy. And it means that the executive budget that I'll be proposing in the spring will have followed an extensive community engagement campaign that will include budget 101 trainings, listening sessions, a community survey, and meetings with partners and advisory committees. The board will also get an update on this, and so please be looking out for that. And my staff and I are happy to connect to answer any questions. The last thing I wanted to just mention is that next week is Thanksgiving, so that there aren't going to be any board meetings next week. I will say that in a year when we have seen so much hardship, so much adversity fall on so many of our neighbors, I want to express my gratitude to everyone on this board for your leadership in navigating these times. I'm also especially grateful for our Multnomah County employees here at Multnomah County for their generosity of spirit, their care and compassion for those in needs, and for their steadfast resistance against intolerance and injustice everywhere. We are having an internal food drive happening right now, so I want to encourage folks to participate in that. And I want to thank our incredible community for the way that they have stepped up and shown up over these last, especially these last unsettling months, from protecting neighbors who are impacted by immigration abductions to donating and volunteering to provide food for families impacted when SNAP benefits were turned off, to the creative and joyful ways that protests have been taking place at the ICE facility. People in Multnomah County are showing up and showing that we are really what we're really made of and how central caring for each other is as a value for this community. I think each of us has a part to play in navigating these troubling times, and no role or deed is too small or inconsequential. Despite everything that is going on around us, what this county manages to do, the amount and quality of services we're able to provide to our community every single day gives me hope and a reason to celebrate. We heard about some of that great work today. I just want to wish everyone a good Thanksgiving, surrounded by love, joy, and delicious food. I want to thank, make sure we're keeping in mind the neighbors who may not have those opportunities, but I really believe through our collective actions that we have things to be thankful for, in this community being one of those. So thanks, everyone. Appreciate the time today. And that concludes today's regular board meeting. There being no more further business, we are adjourned.